Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I welcome author and speaker Lon Safko. Lon is the author of 9 innovative best-selling books, which have shown corporations how to master social media marketing, how to fuse traditional, digital, and social marketing, how to train managers to think creatively. I can do this. And he detailed the secrets of launching a successful online business. His best-selling book, which is on my desk right now as we speak, is The Social Media Bible, and it hit number 1 on Amazon in both their marketing and business categories. This book, for me, because I'm a techie, and you don't have to be a techie to read this book, but it's fascinating to me. It unlocks the mysteries of the hottest new internet waves, social media, such as Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube for Business. We're also going to talk about his most recent book, which is the Fusion Marketing Bible, and we'll be talking a lot today about fusion marketing. Just so you know, Lon has founded 14 successful companies, holds 3 U.S. patents for 3D internet advertising, has 18 inventions in the Smithsonian, and privately coaches companies on harnessing social media, marketing, and innovative thinking to create higher productivity and profits. And I am just intimidated reading that. Lon, good morning.
Holy moly, I hope I live up to that.
I was like, why is this guy talking to me anyway?
I hope I live up to that introduction. Jeez.
Well, you know, this is a makeup show because you were supposed to be coming on last week. I had this epic meltdown of internet and telephone just before you came on this show. And thank you so much for coming back on a busy Saturday morning to make up that show. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I wouldn't miss this for the world. We had so much fun talking on the phone last week. I'm really looking forward to today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Well, listen, you're a man with a lot of things going on. And I would love for you, number one, to tell people where they can find you on the internet. And number two, I'd love to hear some of your backstory. I mean, you didn't just pop out of bed one day and say, I'm going to do all these things.
Yeah,
did
well,
you? I need to know.
Well, you know, it was multiple days, but that's kind of how it works. Yeah. Yeah, the best way to find me is just type in Lon Safko, L-O-N-S-A-F-K-O, because there's about 381,000 web pages that either talk about me or my books. Or that's Google juice, by the way. We may get to that today.
I hope we do. And you know what? If we don't, I'm hoping you'll come back. I'm going to put it right out there right now.
Yeah,
normally at the end of the show, I say, would you please come back? But I'm just going to attack you straight out of the chute and say, I wish you'd come back because we have so much to talk about. So where would you like to start? I mean, social media marketing, of course, is critical. I would like for you to really, if you don't mind, share a bit of your backstory, though. To me, the journey is always the most fascinating part.
Yeah, it is kind of fun. It's not just the destination. Well, I was born at a very young age. Back in the East Coast. Okay, I won't go back quite that far. But in the 70s, I graduated with a civil engineering degree, and I heard about this piece of technology, and I thought it was a perfect match for engineering. It was called, computer. And nobody got it. So I bought one of the first Apple computers and actually created the first computer-aided design software systems with over 30 different applications for civil engineers. And I didn't realize I was the first at the time. I just thought it was a kind of a cool idea. So that was the first kind of set of inventions. And then I started working on programming artificial intelligence. And then by the late 1970s, I had the first voice recognition computer ever made, so that you can simply talk to your computer and would do what you asked. And then I thought, wouldn't it be cool if you can get the computer to actually speak? So I taught the computer how to speak, which also was one of the first. And then I thought, what if you can get it to turn on lamps and appliances and lock doors and adjust air conditioning? So in the early 80s.
That was you?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I worked for the company called
X10. I didn't know that.
Wow. Yeah, they had some technology but didn't know what to do with it. So I went back to New Jersey and met with X10 Powerhouse and actually developed some of the hardware and software for them so that they can launch their company. And what I had was a computer where you can just tell it to turn on the lights and appliances. And then somebody says, hey, have you ever thought of doing that with the disabled? So mm-hmm. I didn't, okay. And I worked with several disabled people and then actually saved their lives. So that launched my next decade and a half where I built a computer company with about 25 employees, 25 offices around the U.S. and 3 international. And I created the first computer to ever save a human life, which is still on display at the world headquarters at Apple's headquarters in Cupertino. And that led to the 18 inventions in the Smithsonian Institution, as well as the 30,000 personal documents of mine, which are part of the permanent collection of the Smithsonian. Weird, huh?
I have to ask, what was the story? How was the life saved?
Well, what happened was it was an engineer. He was an engineer himself, and he had a friend who was a quadriplegic, and it was Thanksgiving of 1986, 85. And he invited him over to his house, and after dinner, he was wheeling him down his front steps, lost his balance with the wheelchair. The wheelchair fell forward. He flipped over the wheelchair, hit his neck on the step, and actually, broke his neck and became a quadriplegic. So for the next several months in the hospital, he lost his job, he lost his home, he lost his life savings, he maxed out his insurance, his wife left him. And even though he couldn't move, he spent the next several months trying to commit suicide. So when I heard about this, I deliberately built this computer for him, and he didn't want anything to do with it. He wanted to die. And then over the next couple of months, he actually started to use it. And within 9 months, he had a condominium in Seattle, and he got his job back because he was actually employable at that point.
That is a wonderful story. I'm just my jaw dropped, honestly. I quit breathing while you were talking about that story. That is an amazing story. How is he today?
He actually lived for really quite a long time. But the problem with physically disabled, especially quadriplegics, they have a tendency to develop pneumonia. But he lived for over 10 years, and he was extremely productive, and he was happy. And that actually, what happened to him inspired me to actually go out and build a company and help physically disabled from around the world.
That has to be a high point of your career or careers, I think.
Well, you know, it was one of those few things that at the end of the day you could really kind of feel good about what you were doing.
Yeah.
And it led to just an awful lot of stuff, about 125 different pieces of software, and again, the 18 inventions that are in the Smith, and it taught me a lot about human nature and about being charitable, and it gave me something really good to put on my resume.
No. I think that's the least of it. That is an amazing story, and I've seen stories like this. You know, you'll read about them or see them, and you know, where a piece of equipment or electronic or even a dog saves somebody's life, and you're always thinking, man, that was serendipitous. Apparently, you were the serendipity.
You know, it really was serendipity, not to stretch the story out for the whole hour, but I was working in an Apple computer store, and it was the week between Christmas and New Year's, so, of course, retail sales was completely quiet, and I was talking to the computer, and I was saying, red, left, green, and I was drawing a Christmas wreath on the computer just by talking to it. And a guy came up to me. I didn't even hear him come into the store. I said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm talking to my computer. Don't run out of the store. It's okay. And then I showed him what I invented. And then he said he had worked for Invacare Medical Supplies, and he was working with this patient trying to save his life, but realized that within the next 30 days, he was going to die. And he said, did you ever think about using that for the disabled? And I said, no, it never crossed my mind. So for the next 30 days, I built a computer specifically for this guy.
Wow.
So it really was serendipity.
It was serendipity, yeah. I love that word, I'm telling you. So you've done all of these massively wonderful things, and you've helped your fellow man. And I'm guessing you're living the best and highest use of your life that you possibly can. But how did you get into social media? That's a stretch.
If you look at my resume, the first thing people say is, man, there's the poster child for ADD.
I didn't say that.
But you probably thought it at one point or another.
So I actually
was tested, by the way, and I don't have ADD, which I'm kind of glad because I don't need
a
disability to have to deal with. But what happened after that was I ran that company until the mid-90s. 94, I had one of the very first websites ever because I realized when nobody else knew or cared about the Internet, I realized it was something that I call a disruptive technology, just like the previous disruptive technology, which was the computer. So I was an early adopter on that. And then in the late 90s, I had one of the very first e-commerce websites. And this was at a point where people were terrified to put their credit cards in the Internet. But
I remember those days. Trust me. My very first computer, honestly, this is just before the Internet kind of burst into the play, but I had to have this computer. I knew at gut level that I was going to make a living with a computer. I didn't know how. There was no Internet, or at least it wasn't available to the public.
Right.
And I bought this $3,000 boat anchor.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
it had all
nowadays,
the good stuff,
it's a boat
manuals.
Yeah.
I mean, for the longest kind of time, I spoke DOS.
Right. Right.
C/.
Yeah.
That's right.
I remember those days.
I know what you're talking about. I do.
Yeah, and those giant 8-inch disks and then eventually 5 1/4 actually held up to 170K.
I was, 170 kilobytes. So excited. It was Christmas for me all the time.
I remember that.
I still have some. I kept some of them. Just, you know, you keep artifacts of your prior life.
Oh,
I still have some of those things.
You and I are too much alike. I did too. They're in a box in the garage.
Yeah, but I bet yours has better content than mine does.
You know what? We'll never know, will we?
No. I mean, we can't do anything with them. They're kind of like 8-track tapes. They're horrible. They're just taking up space.
Yesterday, my cousin called me and asked me for a copy of a DVD from when I videotaped my grandmother before she passed away with the family history back in 1991. And I said, I never transferred it to DVD. It's still on VHS. And I searched the house high and low for a VHS player, and I threw them all away, so I'm going to have to go to Goodwill to buy one.
Well, you know, I think, and I'm not positive, but it seems to me like places like Office Depot can do those for you.
Oh, okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, check around, because there are places that can handle those conversions.
Oh, okay. Except I got about 40, VHS that I got to...
It could get expensive.
Yeah. Okay, so back to we have so much fun just going off on tangents. I love this. So social media. So what happened was in the early 2000s, when the Internet really was starting to catch on, I invented something called three-dimensional Internet advertising, and then I got 3 patents on it. And then about 2004, I saw something that was really strange. It was called MySpace, and I saw how it was catching on. So I asked all my friends, real geeky, by the way, I mean, you can imagine how geeky my friends are. Probably you have a few of your own.
I do.
And
I am one.
See? I are one. So everybody told me, you know, social media is like Web 2.0. We don't even know what the heck that is either, and it has no substance. Pay no attention to it. It's going to go away. And I was like, no, this is going to be disruptive. So for the next couple of years, 2 years, I kind of watched it and learned about it. And then in 2006, I went back to my publisher at the time, Pearson, and I said, social media, you guys got to focus on this. This is something that's really going to take off. And they absolutely refused. They wouldn't touch my manuscript.
Really?
And I went to all of their labels. Yeah, Sam's and Peachnut and Wharton Books. And I was turned down by every one of their labels. So I said, I'm going to have to jump publishers. And at the time, Wiley got it. They really understood early on in the game that social media was going to be important. And I wrote the contract for the Social Media Bible. I guess it was about 2007. And to this day, it's still the biggest book ever written on social media.
I know. And, you know, I noticed about the same time, 2006, 2007, I'm not a TV watcher. I really don't care for it.
Yeah.
And I don't really care for movies. My mind is too busy for that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
It, I have to either really slow down to watch a movie, and honestly, I just fall asleep, fall over, and drool. I never make it through a movie. But I just don't. My brain just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
But I noticed back in, and there is a point to this story, back in 2006 probably, I would notice on TV commercials, I'd be cooking and I'd turn around and see a TV commercial. And I remember seeing, I think it was JCPenney's, said, "We have a Twitter account." I mean, they announced it to the world. And I started going, what? Hey, what?
What the heck is that?
Yeah, well, I knew what it was, but I didn't know they knew what it was. So I started paying attention, and none of these big brands, Overstock, it's called O now, Overstock.com was one of the earliest adopters.
Yeah.
And I remember standing in front of my TV, because commercials kind of fascinate me. They're so bad that a lot of times I'll stand there and just dissect the commercial.
Yeah, I do that too.
Do you do that too? It's like, what are they saying?
Oh, I do, yeah.
What do they want me to buy? What the heck?
It's the point, right? What was that?
Yeah, what is that? So, I find it fascinating that they're just so awful that they must have a market. It's not me, that's all I can say.
Yeah.
But I remember watching JCPenney and Overstock.com, because I was a huge Overstock fan at the time. I still you know, shop a little there, but when they first hit the streets running, I was there. I mean, I was buying stuff like crazy with them.
Yep. Yep.
But when I remember standing there going, okay, there's something afoot here. And I came into my office and I made a note, pay attention to this. So I started paying attention to social media marketing right about that time.
Wow.
And you know, I credit Overstock.com with that for getting my attention.
You were very early in that stage.
Was that?
Well, you know, even though they had those big brands, they all had Twitter and Facebook. But you know, honest to gosh, even to this day, many Fortune 1000 companies have it, but they're not doing anything with it.
There's
no strategy.
Right.
They're not monetizing.
Nope.
So they were early adopters.
And it's amazing to me. Yeah. And I remember standing there going, this is going to get big very quickly. You know, and 6 months later, I was telling businesses that I work with, if you don't have social media up and running, you're standing still. You are wasting your time.
Excellent.
And like your publisher would tell you, well, what are you talking about? We don't want to bother with that. Mm-mm-mm-mm. And I fought and fought and fought with them. And now they're like,
okay,
what do we do? Well, you should have started 6 years ago, but it's never too late.
Yeah, now you're playing catch up.
That's exactly right. But yeah, I noticed that trend back in the day.
Well, and that was the same thing even with computers. I mean, a lot of businesses didn't want computers. They didn't feel that they needed them. And the early adopters didn't know what to do with them. And the same with the Internet. A lot of companies didn't want their information available or accessible 24/7. And in the early days, we didn't even know what to do with it. Everybody did what we called at the time brochureware, which was just an electronic copy of our company's brochure.
Yeah, or business cards. You know, sometimes that's all it was business card up there.
Yeah, exactly.
Your contact information, that's it. That's all you got.
Yeah.
Do you remember, Lon, and I remember this, and I want to know if you have the same kind of, you know, memory or observation. Back in the day, you know, when people put up their business websites, you didn't see pictures of people. You know, you could find their company page. And there might be a tiny picture of a guy with a suit and a tie and glasses, and, you know, the bank president's, you know, portrait behind him or something.
Right.
But you did not, there was no personalization of anything. And I have to tell you, when I first started seeing people put their pictures out on the Internet, I was frankly appalled by it. And I'll tell you who I noticed first was Joel Kalm.
Oh.
Do you know who Joel Kalm is?
I've heard the name.
Yeah, he wrote the he was one of the very early people to jump on Google advertising and AdWords and, you know, that type of thing. He's been around since the 90s, big name in marketing.
Yeah.
But he stuck his picture out there, and I thought, what the heck are you doing?
Well, that was such a big deal, we had a term for it. Do you remember the term? It was called rich media.
Right.
Yeah, when we started
adding
video and MIDIs.
And we were able
to
do that because of GUI, you know, GUI. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell
we dated ourselves sufficiently.
Yeah. We're talking about graphical user interface for those non-geeks in the audience.
That's right, GUI.
GUI, yeah.
That's right.
Okay, one time I had a door that wouldn't stay shut, and I took a piece of equipment off my desk, and I dropped it down there, and this is how nerdy I am. A friend of mine came in. She goes, oh, you have a SCSI hard drive down there. And I went, I know. She knew it was a SCSI hard drive. It's pathetic.
Yeah, that dates us.
Yes, it does.
And it definitely calls us out as geeks, if anybody knows what SCSI is.
SCSI hard drive. Oh, just the fact that she knew what it was made me go out in the kitchen and cook something. I was like, oh, geez.
Yeah, come for
I
food.
I have to get out of here. Yeah. I have to get away from this.
Oh, gosh.
But in our defense, technology moves very fast. So what was viable yesterday, not 10 years ago? What
I got a closet full. Prove it.
Oh, gosh, I know. What are we going to do with those things?
Yeah. Right. I got a whole drawer full of cell phones.
I have the last four. I won't give up my BlackBerry. I'm not sure why. I just won't. I think because it's purdy.
They do make nice looking phones, and their keyboards used to be really nice too.
Yeah,
but you know what?
It's
going to have to be an Apple or an Android eventually.
Yeah, I moved over to iPhone 5.
Yeah,
it took me the longest kind of time, but I finally did it. So you've mentioned a couple of times. We are way off. I've got my talking points here.
Is anybody still listening? Can you tell?
They're gone. Okay, so I want to take you back, though, to a phrase that you've used a couple of times, and that's disruptive. And I'm pretty sure I know what you're talking about, but I would love for you to explain that to our audience.
Yeah, it's just something, when I see something or come up with an idea or I see someone else come up with it, I've always been really good at identifying it as what I called 25 or 30 years ago, disruptive technology. Mm-hmm. And what that means is it's going to be a technology that nobody gets, and it's not in our culture yet, but it's going to change the way we live. And I think probably one of the biggest ones, well, the biggest one I saw first was a calculator. And I remember paying $150 for the first calculator, and all it did was add, subtract, multiply, and divide. But I knew.
Did you have a Texas Instrument? I still have my first one.
I did, and I programmed those for engineering and sold them to New York State and Westchester County, and it was one of the first one of the first computer-aided design programs for engineering.
I'll be darned.
And part
and
of it was
a lot of money for that little puppy too.
Oh my gosh, there were
hundreds.
I
think I paid like $147, and it made me sick because this was a long time ago.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, that's a car note. Back
that's right. That was a lot
really
of money
want
at that
to
time.
Do this? I had to have it. And I used it. Look, I actually have keyboards. I came across it the other day.
Yeah.
Some of my buttons, you can't read them.
Yeah, they're just
you
worn.
Know, I wore them out. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that funny?
You know what? I bet it still works.
Yeah.
If I can find a battery for it.
Right. That's right. That was one of the first. And then digital watches, I realized that was going to be a big deal. And then I think after that it was a recordable video on VHS. And then, you know, like the most of us, eventually this technology works its way into our society and replaces previous technology or changes the way we do business. But the funny thing is that most people don't recognize it when they see it, but they won't adopt it until everybody else adopts it. And that was true with computers. It took more than 10 years. Into the mid-80s before people were comfortable enough to start buying them and putting them in their homes, their businesses, and the schools. It took a decade where I had one within 6 months. So, and the same was true with social media. I mean, it went mainstream only just a few years ago, and you'd be shocked how many small businesses in America still don't participate in social media because they don't get it. They don't understand the value.
Well, and it scares them. You know, I'm a web developer and a virtual assistant, OBM, online business manager.
Yeah.
And I talk with a lot of people. I have a lot of clients. All of my clients are very tuned into it, largely because I do it for them. But, you know, I will tell people when they call me and say, I need a website, this is what I need. And I'm very frank with them that I say, listen, I will build you a gorgeous website. However, unless you're willing to allow me to install your social media, create your profiles, brand your profiles, and train you on how to do this, I won't build the website.
Good for you.
Because it won't do you any good.
It won't work.
I mean, I can build you this gorgeous website, and unless you are driving traffic to it, unless you are engaging your market, that website didn't do you a bit of good, and I just took your money, and it's not going to happen.
Wow. That's a lot of integrity, and it's absolutely true.
I won't do it. I mean, I can't see any point in building a website that just sits out there in space.
Well, and that's exactly what it will do if you don't, as you said, engage your audience.
Mm-hmm. And it scares them. And it goes back to what you were saying. They're like, oh, it's just more work. Well, yeah, but success requires work. Where's the disconnect here? But
exactly.
And I send them documents. I have videos in the back of the website. There's 30 videos.
Wow.
You know, on how to operate their website. I show them what they could never touch, because if they do, it'll cost them $95 an hour for me to fix it.
But
I also send them documents and little videos on how to work with their social media. And oftentimes they don't want to do it, so they'll hire me, on a retainer basis at that point.
Oh, good.
But they have the tools. They can do it. A lot of times it's just educating them.
Yes.
You know, this is how you do it. It's not difficult. Take a half hour a day. You're not that busy that you can't promote your business.
Well, things that people don't understand, I tell people in my presentations, you know, social media is like the monster in the closet. Once you turn on the light, it's just a hoodie. So just do it.
I like that. I want to go back to disruptive. I have it written down in red.
Why
that particular word?
Oh, you know, it was just funny. I'm not even sure the exact time that I coined it, but it just meant a lot to me, because if you think about it, every one of the technologies that we've talked about, right down to the SCSI drive, really was disruptive, because it changed the way we lived. It changed the way we communicated. It changed the way we did business. It actually disrupted us in almost always in a positive way.
And see, I find that to be true of texting.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of mobile marketing that you can do right now, but I'm not one of those people that's attached to my phone.
Right.
I'm just not. I mean, it's a tool for me, but it's not a lifeline. But I am astonished by how many people have that thing in their hand and they're talking, or they're texting and they're not paying attention to their surroundings.
Yes.
I find that disruptive.
You know, that kind of negative disruptive. My brother and his daughter came to my house a couple of months ago, and we were all having dinner, and they were unusually quiet, and they were checking things on their phone. And then all of a sudden, my brother jumped up and says, "We're going to run over to the electronics store." And my daughter, my niece got up, and they just left. And we looked at each other, and I said, "What the heck? Where were we?" They didn't say anything through the whole meal. They were actually texting each other under the table while they were eating, having a conversation.
You're kidding.
And no.
Oh.
I thought that was the rudest damn thing that I've ever seen.
It's very rude. Let me tell you, I had a group, you know, I always have these big holiday parties here, and I had a group of people here, not this Christmas, but last Christmas, and I had a very similar situation where phones were going off and people were texting, and I finally just stood up and announced to the room, "Turn them off.
Turn them off.
Turn them off. This is a holiday. We're here to celebrate the holidays and visit with one another.
Good for you.
Yeah, I'm going to ask all of you to put those things down." And they just looked at me like, "What?" I looked around, Lon. There were two laptops out.
There was
a tablet out, and everybody had their phones. And I said, "Yeah, I've cooked for 2 days. Put that crap away."
You know,
and I'm pretty sure I said it that way.
The small fork goes on the left, the spoon goes on the right, and your cell phone goes to hell back in your car.
It goes in your bag. And just
That's right.
You were here. I made this delicious turkey. You're going to enjoy it, by golly.
That's right.
But I remember looking around and being appalled and really rather insulted, and none of it was deliberate. But these are people who should have known better. These are not young
adults.
Kids.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
well,
I found it, that was disruptive to me, and I didn't find that a good thing at all. But now they know when they come into my house, they check those phones at the door.
Right. But think about it. Yeah. That technology is so disruptive in their lives that they can't even attend a party without making that
right.
a piece of that experience. That's disruptive.
And it was Christmas Day. I mean, what are you who are you supposed to be chatting to on Christmas Day?
You're not important.
Exactly. I don't get it. And I see it with kids in my neighborhood. You know, I live in a very small neighborhood, and I'll see these kids, you know, get off the school bus. And we have one way in and one way out of my little dead-end neighborhood here. And Lon, it's so sad. They get off the bus. They may be three or four in a row. They're walking abreast down the road.
Yeah.
We don't have sidewalks. And they're texting. They're not talking to one another. There's no spring in their step. They look sallow, overweight, unhappy.
Yeah.
And I'm not making this up. I actually stood out at my mailbox one day and observed them after having a chat with Larry Winkett about how he thinks kids are getting fat, lazy, and stupid. And I challenged
him. Well, we got studies
Larry
to prove
Winkett.
That. And you know what? Adults are doing it too.
I know. So, you know, I happened to be checking my mail midday, and here come these kids. And I thought, you know, I'm going to watch them. Do you know that these three or four kids walked right past me? I did not exist.
They didn't even see it,
sure. They raised their hand. Nope. I could have put my foot out and tripped them.
Yeah, they fall over like dominoes.
I thought about it. I didn't do it.
Yeah, but you did smile to yourself.
I did.
Yeah.
And then I called Larry Winkett and said, I'm so sorry I argued with you. You're right.
That's so true.
I know.
Oh,
but
gosh.
It is. It's a crying shame. But see, when you say disruptive, I get what you're talking about with disruptive.
Yeah.
But I think it's a term that can be used for good and for bad.
Absolutely. And all technology could be used for good and
bad.
Absolutely. Yep. So, yeah,
okay.
Social media is here to stay.
And,
you know, the trend is right now, and I just spoke with the editor of the Phoenix Business Journal, and I said, what were the trends in 2012? And one of the things that they had said was a big trend is that the people who were hired in at large salaries to become vice presidents of social media marketing are now getting fired because they're not finding.
Really?
Yeah, that's the trend.
Oh.
Is that big companies are eliminating their social media people. And it played perfectly into the latest book, The Fusion Marketing Bible, because in the opening chapter I said that I was in a Fortune 500 company and they introduced me to their vice president of social media marketing, and I made the introduction. I said, and before I leave, would you introduce me to your vice president of billboards? And they looked at me like, did you take a sharp blow to your head? And I said, and I laughed, and I said, just as if you don't have a vice president of billboards in 4 years, you will no longer have a vice president of social media, because social media is just marketing tools. The smart companies are the ones that are going to perfectly blend the social media tools with the traditional tools and get one to play off of the other, and don't keep them separated like the OCD, don't let my peas touch my carrots.
Right.
And too many companies are making that mistake right now.
Well, what are your thoughts on, and this is being called relationship marketing right now. I like relationship marketing. I don't want to be sold to ever.
Totally agree.
If you're selling something to me, my spidey sense goes off and I'm backing out the door.
Right.
And I think that's more and more the trend, isn't it?
You know, it really is the trend, and the reason is that, you know, for the last 100 years that we've been doing traditional marketing, the last 6 or 7 years we've been doing social media marketing, we abused it. You know, there's studies like you're exposed to, I don't know, 3,500 different commercial messages in any given day. Well, we're sick of it. We're sick and tired, and if you've actually opened up something, it's called newspaper, you'll see that it is more advertising, and same with magazines, and we're just tired of it. And so social media was kind of a breath of fresh air because you got to build a relationship with an individual, a product, or a company, and then that way when you were ready to purchase, when you entered the sales funnel, it's that company that you think of first, and, of course, you'll buy your product or service from that company. So it really was a huge change. So, again, the smart companies are going to be the ones that take social media, this relationship marketing, and traditional media, and use it in such a way where they build relationships first, which eventually leads to trust. Trust leads to revenue.
Right. And I know it's difficult for people to build that kind of top-of-mind position. They're like, oh, it just takes so long. It just takes so long. Yes, it does. But you didn't ask your wife to marry you after dinner, did you? You know, on your first date,
right.
I mean, you've got to build these relationships. And you have to be out there, in my opinion, with consistent, good information. You know, you want to be top of mind. You want to be, you know, kind of always in the, you know, people can see you out of the corner of their eye, but you're not bombarding them with stuff.
Exactly.
And to me, that's kind of what social media marketing is. You're there. You're a resource. I mean, you know, you're a constant resource. but you're not selling to them. And when they're ready, they will come to you.
Because you did respect them. And that's why they trust you. That's why you do have a relationship.
Right.
And, yeah, it is an investment. But look at the companies that take the auto industry. On average, auto dealer spends 56% of its annual budget on television newspaper advertising. Newspaper advertising.
Really?
Which, yeah, 56% of their annual budget. There's 17,000 auto dealers in the U.S.
Hmm.
So if you think about the billions and billions that are still spent on adequated, completely useless newspaper advertising because they don't get it. But if you were think about it, if you were able to take $100,000 or $200,000 buy budget and move that into social media marketing, what could you do with that?
Well, no kidding. I mean, to me, putting an ad in a newspaper is like putting an ad on the back of a bus bench, you know.
Exactly.
Seriously. To me, it makes no sense at all. But I haven't taken a newspaper, oh gosh, I don't even know how long. I don't read newspapers. I don't read magazines. Well, magazines to me stink. You know, they always have perfume in them. But
they do.
They stink. Well, around Christmas time, Macy's. You know, I go out to my mailbox and I take those straight to the trash. Like, oh.
My wife just
Macy's
got a free copy of Vogue, and with all of the different perfume ads in them, all emanating at the same time.
Yep.
It was like my eyes
it's
were
like
watering.
Poison.
Yeah.
it's like poison. And I'll tell you what, I don't know how this happens, but now when I go to my PO box, I literally have to go, because I only go, you know, once or twice a month, really. And I always have to go pick up my mail in a plastic bucket because I've gotten tons of magazines that I never, ever signed up for. You know, it's and these are well-known, Rolling Stone. I'm not going to read it.
Right.
You know, there's just a ton of these things, and I always just rip my name off of it, and then I put them there for somebody else if they want that junk. But most of them stink. I wouldn't put those in my car. My eyes would be watering.
I know. And I subscribe to Discover magazine, which I love because it's science and it talks about all science. And yesterday I received my last paper copy. There's just no point anymore.
Right. Well, everything's online. You can get it in iTunes most of the time.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. So I just
have an
aggregator.
Yeah. So where do you see that going with, you know, magazines? And I think print media is pretty well shot, but I think they don't know it. I think they're gut shot, but they don't know they're gut shot.
Yeah, they're like in the movies where they stand and
John
they just
Wayne.
Stare.
I'm thinking John Wayne.
Yeah, they're holding the wound, and then after a couple of really bad lines, then they finally fall face first into the ground.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's absolutely true, and it's not. It's all print. It's ink on dead trees. It's kind of passe. Not that it's ever going to completely disappear, but the value of it. I mean, there'll still be some newspapers, some magazines, you know, for very general older audiences.
Right.
But it definitely is moving online. The publishing industry is having a heck of a time. A year ago, Amazon.
Kindle.
Well, Amazon announced that last July, no, a year ago July, that e-books outsold hardcover books. And then a year ago Christmas, they announced that e-books outsold every other printed form of book that they sell. That's a very powerful trend where paper books are becoming passe.
Well, and I hate to see that. I really do. I have over 3,000 books.
Wow.
I have wall-to-wall books. I have wall-to-wall bookcases in my garage.
Wow.
I've got books in my bedroom. I've got books in the bathrooms. I've got books in my office. I have two Kindles. And I have to tell you, now I'm trending more towards the Kindles and PDFs. I can send those to my Kindles. And, you know, you can read them on your phone. You can read them. You can get the Kindle app or the Nook or exactly whatever it is that you want. And you're not, you know, and I love a good book. I love to crack open the spine.
Yeah.
I love the smell of books. And I'll never, ever give up my books. But now when I find a book, you know, like yours or a good business book that I really, really want, I do three things. I buy it in a hard, you know, in paper because I want to annotate it. I want to put my yellow stickies in it.
Right.
I try to find out if there's a downloadable version, and then I go to audible.com to see if there's – because I like to listen while I'm working.
Smart.
So many of my favorite books I have in three versions.
Ah, multitask.
That's
smart. Well, but, you know, but the 20-somethings don't want the paper versions anymore. They're not as attached as we are. I love walking into Barnes & Noble. I love the smell of a bookstore. Mm-hmm. And but the 20-somethings, even most of the 30-somethings now, they never formed that attachment to paper books the way we have. The 20-somethings were weaned on electronic books.
And, you know, I forget about that, and I guess that's why I was so appalled when I saw these young teenagers walking down the road. They had backpacks, but they didn't look very heavy. You know, when I was a kid, we would bend over on one side.
That's for their ho-hos and their donuts.
But, you know, I was standing there observing them thinking, okay, where are their books? I mean, we carried a backpack and a satchel.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I'm pretty sure one of my arms is longer than the other.
You'd have to switch arms so that you didn't look like an orangutan.
We did, but I'm noticing that people don't pick up actual books anymore.
No.
And I think that's a shame because they're so magical.
Yeah.
They really are.
Well, and same but with music. I play the piano.
Yeah.
My daughter plays the iPod.
Oh, I see.
She plays the iPod, that's it. My wife plays the stereo, I mean. But, you know, they don't teach it in school anymore. It's really played down. You never see kids nowadays learning an instrument. And that's another fear, is the technology.
Know that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The music programs in most public schools have been cut down to almost nothing. And out of my 6 grandkids, not one of them has expressed any interest in actually playing an instrument.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
It seems like I read something online the other day about, and I'd have to go find it. I just gave it kind of a glancing look. Mm. But basically, the music industry, and I think it was country music that I'm thinking of, is basically everything's done in studio. There's no real singers. There's no real Oh, I know what it was.
Yeah.
I wake at 2:00 in the morning, and I was watching Joe Walsh on some kind of a program, Eagles. Joe Walsh.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating. It was absolutely fascinating because he was talking about he had a 20-year hiatus. And he was talking about when he went back to get into the studio, he had a heck of a time finding people who would play real instruments.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm paraphrasing, but that was what I took. And I was like, what? What? He said most everything now is done digitally, electronically, and there are no real even backup singers in some cases. And he said his newest release, whatever it is, I'm going to go find it, is mostly real music, but not 100%. And I went, made me sick. It really did.
Well, I mean, they started with the drums because all you have to do is just capture the sound and the rhythm would be perfect. You know, there's never any offbeat or change in beat because you eliminate the human being. And with the Kurzweil system of about 30 years ago where he was able to capture the sound of pianos and violins, he could reproduce anything on the birth of the synthesizer.
Right.
So, now you can actually reproduce instruments with digital quality.
And apparently that's what he was talking about. It was just sad. So I guess my concern is, and this is kind of way out there, though, but what are humans going to be doing? I mean, we don't have to play music anymore. We don't have to read anymore. You know, things are becoming so automated and digitized that, I mean, I see why jobs are lost. But to me, it seems that there's some human quality that's lost there, too.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Now, on the other hand, the physically disabled and some of the socially disabled, the entire autistic community is thriving using social networks like Facebook, for example. They can come out of their shell. They're not intimidated. They're not having to make face-to-face contact. A lot of them are actually able to stay at home because of their social disabilities, but still hold full-time jobs.
And so that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So there's, for every cloud, there's a silver lining.
Always. There always is. I wanted to talk with you about your books, and we got nowhere.
I know, but it's been fun.
It has. I mean, I'm having a great time chatting with you. Let's talk very, very briefly about the Social Media Bible, because that's the one I have. Just kind of give our audience a quick overview on that one. And then, honestly, guys, whoever's listening, go get that book. You really need to have this book. And then I would love to touch on your newest book after that.
Yeah.
Well, let me say this. We're going to try to do this.
Yeah, so, we'll try to stay focused.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, the social media Bible, again, what I realized early on is that everybody wants to know what social media was, and everybody was, like, focusing in on little bits and pieces. It was like an elephant, and one person would write a book about a trunk, and another one would write a book about a toe or a tail. But so I wanted to create one book that really explained everything. And it's not a book that you have to necessarily read cover to cover because it's 600 pages, but I did want to give you everything. So say, for example, video sharing. I'll give you a piece of the history. When was the first digital movie made? Who made it? How was it distributed? How it grew over the years so that now we have something like YouTube. So it takes you through the history. But more importantly, it kind of shows you, okay, now that we're here, what can you do with it? How do you use it for business? How do you create videos that actually convert to revenue? And I do that in each of the 20 or so chapters. And by the way, that was one of the toughest things, is to take everything in the entire world of social media and compartmentalize it into 20 major categories. So that's in the Social Media Bible right now is in its third edition because we keep it fresh, and it's actually in five languages now.
Yeah, I have the third edition.
Oh, okay. Not in Chinese, though, right?
And Got Video starts, no. And Got Video is chapter 12, if anybody wants to know.
Ah, there you go.
I've got the book on my desk.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
No.
So even to this day.
I don't bother lying. It's just too difficult to keep up.
Oh, my gosh.
It's true.
So it's the biggest book ever written, and I'm kind of glad because, trust me, I would not know more about social media than anybody on earth if I wasn't contractually obligated to produce that book. Most people focus on Facebook or Twitter. I had to study every single component, so I probably know more than anybody does just because I had to produce a 600-page book. But the good news is that I can use that for my own business now.
Right, right. And you've got a program, too, that I want to, you know, talk a little bit about towards the end of the show. So the book is great. I mean, really, I'm glancing at it now. I mean, there's mobile. I mean, you've got search engine marketing. There was even an area in here on gaming.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is important because gaming is kind of what got us. I think that's to some degree, and I'm guessing here, and I want your opinion on this. I think gaming and people who created these games is why the Internet is so beautiful now.
Well, actually, it's porn.
Porn?
I'm sorry to blindside you. It was porn built...
You just broke my heart.
It's pornography that built the Internet.
Oh, crap.
I'm not kidding. There were companies. There's a company right here in Scottsdale. It's a hosting company. They do $54 million a week pornography subscriptions, and there was an entire division in the 80s and 90s in Microsoft that would just work on faster, better, more efficient servers, web servers, so that they can transmit pornographic video, because video is extremely data intensive. So it was the money and it was the demand that created all of this awesome technology that the rest of us are now benefiting from.
Porn.
Sorry.
I'm going to have to go brush my mind.
Yeah, I know.
Clean my brain out with bleach.
I know.
Ick.
I know.
What? You know what? I'm just going
That's a silver lining, though, in that dirty cloud.
But I'm going to rinse that out, and I'm going to go with gaming. I'm sorry.
Gaming, yes. That's what I meant to say. Gaming was really what...
Yeah. But, you know, that does make sense, because obviously where there is huge demand and there is huge money involved...
Correct.
...that is going to drive, you know, that's the impetus to get things done. So that absolutely does make sense, kind of like we have Velcro because astronauts didn't want their spoons floating around in space.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, and, you know, whatever it takes, in my opinion, whatever it takes, if the rest of the world is benefiting from it, then I'm okay with that.
Right.
But, yeah, you're absolutely right. Gaming was really important, and it was funny in the early days. I got a lot of criticism for putting things like gaming, virtual worlds, and email marketing in that book. And it was like, wait a minute. First of all, email is the original social media. It's the original digital technology that we used for two-way communication. I mean, hello. And gaming, I mean, if you look at, like, World of Warcraft or Halo 3, 16.5 million people participate in each of those games. And the,
right.
The,
and the little
what do you think the average age?
Hello Kitty or something?
I'm sorry?
Oh, I don't. What was the one for the little kids where they would buy little animals and?
Oh yeah, there was something.
Get a hold
penguin
of their mommy's
and then
credit
there was a farm.
Card. Yeah.
My granddaughters were really into that.
Really?
What do you think the average age demographic on an online gamer?
I'm going to say 10, 12.
Exactly, 42.
Really?
Yeah, really. Yes, mostly, yeah, the biggest bulge is middle age, and it's everything
You're
from
kidding.
9 to 90. What do you think the male-female demographic split would be?
I'm going to say male.
Yeah, within 0.5%. It's
really?
Like 49.5% women and 50.5% male. It's almost exactly equal between men and women.
I would not have guessed that. I'm not a gamer. I never have been. I don't enjoy them. I don't like them. I do.
Right.
I don't have good hand-eye coordination.
Right.
I'm the person that's looking at that game going, how'd they build that? And I'm trying to break the code.
I don't care
about the game itself. But
same with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, but think about it. You get 16.5 million people. 50-50
wow.
split, male-female, average age of 42, so it's mostly the typical demographic, 34 to 55. So are you 16.5 million of them, so is there a good chance that your company demographic is in there? Oh, yeah, really good chance.
Yeah.
Probably 100%. Yeah, and that's why companies like McDonald's, Coca-Cola, Axe Deodorant, Hewlett-Packard are huge in-game advertisers. When you're driving that car around the track for the 50th time and your computer's running slow and you go past an HP CPU billboard and you know you got to buy a new computer, guess what you buy? Mm-hmm. You buy HP.
Because that visual cue is in there. You've seen it over and over again.
Exactly. And you trust
that's
them.
That's subliminal, isn't it?
Thank you. In a way, I mean, technically it's not because it's out in the open, but it is subliminal because you build trust for that brand because they share in something that you're passionate, so you think they're passionate about it, and you have something in common.
Now, aren't they reversing that a bit, too, because I'll see commercials every now and then that, and I think it's McDonald's. I don't know. I just notice the ones I really hate.
yeah.
And there's a few of them, like the Fiat commercial with, what's his name, that drug-addicted guy, Charlie Sheen.
Drug-addicted guy.
Yeah.
He has it on his business card, by the way.
I'm sure he does. That commercial just makes me stop and throw things at the TV. I'm like, look.
Oh, so you're one of those that talk to the TV. My wife gives me help for that all the time.
I yell at it.
Yeah.
Some of my best conversations are with the television in the living room.
Well, I think you may be exposing more than you need to, but I agree.
I know. But, you know, I find it just so appalling. But I have noticed, or I think I've noticed, now that you're saying this, you know, where McDonald's and some of these food companies are now partnering with games.
Yes.
Is that true? Have you noticed that, too?
Well, it's absolutely true because they're a huge, strong, passionate demographic. These people are extremely passionate about online gaming. They work during the day so that they have enough money to have a house so they can buy a computer so that they can game all night.
I actually know people like that. I'm not kidding. I do.
Yeah. Yeah, the guy
In fact,
that they interviewed.
My computer is a gaming computer. It was built. It's a custom-built computer.
Yeah.
And it was built by my ex-husband as a gaming computer. It is massively powerful.
Yeah.
And when I took it into Office Depot, the little nerdy guys clutched my computer with its giant fan. Apparently that just got them.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And the casino's so beautiful. I didn't think I was going to see it again.
You can hear the angels saying,
I mean, every guy in the store was running over to look at this computer. Like, oh!
That's
and
creepy.
I don't play games.
It meant nothing to you.
No. All I know is they were fascinated with the size of the fans on it. That's all I know.
Woo!
I know, it was really
Check
pathetic.
Check out the size of her fans.
That's what they were doing.
That's crazy.
I felt like Jessica Rabbit.
You're not bad, you're just drawn that way.
That's exactly right. But it was interesting, you know, to see what really trips people up. And these were young kids, you know, they're probably in, you know, junior college or whatever it is that they're doing. And, I mean, that just really got their juices flowing. So you're right. there are a lot of people like that out there.
It's very passionate.
And I get it. So it's a huge market. Yeah.
Well, you know, and there's another way of doing it. If you're a small business, medium business, you're not going to advertise in World of Warcraft. But one of the things, I have a friend of mine who's an author who's written 14 or 15 business books, and he did his first novel. And it's kind of, it's called Cyber Kill, and it's kind of a spy novel. So what he did is he understood the power of gaming, and he hired some high school kid for like $2,000 to create this flash game on his website. And what you can do is crawl around the air vents and drop down into an office, and you find a key, and the key unlocks a safe, and in the safe there's some documents, and you play this game. Well, what he found was is that one out of every five people that came to that website to play the game bought the book. So just by having the game on there, he increased the sales by 20% every day and now for years.
That's brilliant.
It was only a one-time
investment.
Has the
game been updated and it's still the way it was?
No, it's still the way it was 3, 4, or 5 years ago because it matches the content of the book. So it was a one-time investment. So there's other ways of looking at gaming. And believe it or not, Obama, when he ran in his first election, actually had two apps created, which were games, to try to bring in the younger audience to get their vote.
Mm-hmm. Well, it worked.
It does. It did.
Yeah,
it does. So gaming is powerful, and it's addictive.
Well, yeah. And look, for me, social media is addictive. I mean, I will have to make myself shut down and not go onto the social media and chat with people and visit with people.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of those things can become addictive if you're doing it properly. Obviously, it's very effective, but it can also be a huge time waster.
Well, it's a time vampire for sure.
There you go.
I almost never use social media to be social. I'm kind of an anti-social social media expert. I use it for business. If I'm going to spend an hour on Facebook, I'm going to do it for business. And if I'm going to spend a half hour building tweets, I'm going to do it for business. Every once in a while, I get sucked in.
Yeah. Well, when I say, you know, I'm over there visiting with people, I use Facebook strictly for, you know, to build business. But I do it in a very personable kind of a way.
Nice.
And, you know, that takes, you know, you have to be cognizant of what you're putting out there and, you know, what you're saying and what you're, you know, are you a resource or are you just annoying?
Right.
You know, you have to be careful. And we did not get, we're out of time. We did not get anywhere. We didn't. But I had so much fun.
Oh, this is great. I love this.
Now, before we go, though, I know you've got this patent-pending marketing tool called the SAFCO Wheel. So tell us what the SAFCO, I know what it is, but tell our audience what the SAFCO Wheel is.
Yeah, let me try to do it as quickly as possible. What I realized was that social media is starting to go soft because it's becoming fragmented, and we have to look at marketing back in the big picture. We have to take digital tools, which is one-way digital communication, social media tools, two-way digital communication, and traditional tools, which we know we've all grown up around, and we have to completely fuse them, and that's why the name of the book is Fusion Marketing. And the SAFCO Wheel is a really fun little kind of a thing that you can download. It's almost like a game, but what happens is it shows you opportunities that you never would have seen before by fusing these three different types of marketing together into one cohesive plan. It really is absolutely amazing. I'd love to come back and talk about it sometime.
Yeah, absolutely, because I want to talk about what you're calling tradigital marketing. I want to talk about the Fusion Bible. And honestly, the SAFCO Wheel, I thought yesterday that it was in my shopping cart. It wasn't, so I still have my shopping cart on Amazon open, so I'm putting that in there. Where's the best place for people to buy it? Is it on your website or Amazon?
Yeah.
Where do you want to send them?
Well, the best way is just go to lonsafco.com, and there's buttons right at the top where you can go to Social Media Bible and buy it, and I think you get a really good discount at Amazon. And then there's another button for the Fusion Marketing Bible. And again, when you click on it, you can go to any of the online booksellers, whichever one you prefer, and get a good discount.
Okay. Quickly, what is tradigital marketing? Do you have time to just give us a quick?
Yes.
I don't know. Quick.
Well, Well, it's the importance of taking traditional marketing and digital marketing, which includes social, and really fusing them together into a brand new form of marketing, which is originally that was going to be the name of the book. If you take traditional and digital and fuse it, you come up with tradigital marketing.
Right. When I saw that, I thought, okay, that makes sense. I'm not sure what he's talking about, you know, because I haven't read it. You know, I don't know specifically what he's talking about, but I think I get that. So
yeah,
I love that idea. We have 10 seconds, and I mean, we're still going to keep on recording, but people in the chat room are going to drop off. So thank you for being here.
Oh, we'll my pleasure.
No, I'm telling them, thank you for being here. But listen, I really, really want you to come back because I've got so many more questions for you if you've got time.
Love to do it, please. This is so much fun.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Well, listen, is there any – tell people one more time where they can find you.
Just lonsafko.com, L-O-N-S-A-F-K-O.com.
Well, listen, Lon, thank you. I appreciate this more than you know. It was a mess last Friday. It took me 3 or 4 days to get my internet back up. Did you read that story online?
Yes, ma'am. That
oh,
was a nightmare.
Oh, gee. 4 days, 2 trucks, 2 technicians, and I think I bribed one with gumbo. I'm not sure. Just fix it. Just somebody fix it. But I'm back up and running. But I am so thankful that you came on a Saturday morning to visit with me. I really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Any time, and I'll give you a call and see when we can get you set back up. Well, listen, everybody, thank you so much for being here, and the show will be available for download in about an hour. You can also find us in iTunes. Just look for my name or Lon's name. And this is Denise Griffiths. I can't even say my name now. This is Denise Griffiths and Lon Safko wishing you a wonderful weekend, and I will see you next week. Thank you, Lon.
Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.
Hello.